Chodesh Nisan is rapidly approaching the month of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the month of the Chag of Pesach. To put into context that which we do, we suffer from the ever constant danger that what we do in life can be reduced to cultural expressions. Every society has its culture. Jewish society has its culture. But if we're not very careful to be moored in the principles of the Torah in which our activities are based, then we've just become another culture. In the United States, on July 4th, you make a barbecue, a hot dog, a hamburger, a beer. Culture. We have other culture. We have our culture. Eat a piece of matzah, a knedel, it's our culture. New York is a very eclectic place. It is borrowed from all the cultures of the world. The ultimate anomaly we could see, I was walking once here in Queens years back on 108th Street and on Pesach, Halamoy Pesach, I guess, and I passed a luncheonette, a tray for luncheonette for that. That was open on Pesach and was traced. But there was a sign in the window that this week you can get a matzah brah here. What's the aside of Mitzvah Maisius? The Seder we say, Bavrzeh lo amarti, ala b'shoshi yesh matzah moro menochem lefanecha. If we're not rooted in Mitzvahs Maisius, the Rabbi Shalom says, all the stories, you missed the whole point. It ultimately will have no meaning. So whatever meaning it may have in the short term, it will disintegrate and disappear. The yisoid of the Seder is, on one end, reflect on events which took place, which affect us. And as Reb Chaim of Brisk said, twice a day we have a mitzvah of the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. We mention the fact of the Exodus two times a day, at the end of the Kriya Shema. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hoteisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So what differentiates the mitzvah of Higata Levincha on the night of Pesach? What differentiates it is that we need a lengthy recitation. It has a particular style, a format to it. It's a question and answer, and a stimulating format. We have to trace, not merely mention, but trace all the events which surround the Golus and the Geula, the privations that we suffered in the Golus, the redemption, physically and spiritually from that Golus. All of this, Mitzvah Magid. It's a lengthy exploration and to re-experience the events which took place. But in the context of Mitzvah Maisis, Chazal states a very important maimer of Shas that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, the first and the greatest of the Amoraim of Bavel, that La'olam Yasak Adam B'Torah Shalai Lishma. We should be involved in all aspects of Torah, even Shalai Lishma, even if our intentions are not exactly correct. For what reason? Shamitach Shalai Lishma Ba'Lishma. through the Shaloi Lishma will come to do things for the right reasons. And there are, I believe, two fundamental principles being expressed by Rav in this statement. Number one, in general in life, we suffer from inertia. It's hard to get into gear. And if we're going to wait to rev everything up until we're ready to do it, at full steam, lishma, do a mitzvah for the most noble of intentions, we'll never get started altogether. We'll just sit still and life will go by, we'll do nothing. But it's not only that. In the Tfilas and Shabbos, we say, Kachena b'mitzvah secho, v'sein chokena b'sarah secho. We ask the Rabbeinu Shalom to sanctify us with your mitzvahs. When we perform one of the mitzvahs of the Rabbeinu Shalom, there is a metamorphosis which takes place within ourselves. We have heightened our spirituality and our sanctity. We are not the same when we finish as we were when we started. And thus, if a person wants to become a very fast runner, wants to run the 4-minute mile, he can't imagine that one day he's going to get up and start running down the block at a 4-minute mile. It's not going to happen. If we're trained for years, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, 7 minutes, maybe one day he'll be a 4-minute miler. But he has no reasonable expectation that he could arrive at the point of a 4-minute mile if he doesn't train. And that's the same thing. Mitzvahs Maaseiyos and Mekadoshim. Through the Kedusha, which comes through the Mitzvahs Maaseiyos, brings us to greater heights in Ruchnius, opens up possibilities which could not and did not exist before. For Pesach is the Yontif of Mitzvahs Maaseiyos. We could gather around, talk of its history, a very rich history, all the great events which took place, but they would all lose significance if not in the context of Mitzvahs Maaseiyos. And the Mitzvahs Maaseiyos are in two regards. One is how we severed ourselves from its right. The Meshech Chochma writes that in the Talmud Rishalmi we find that Chometz was a part of the service of the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. It was used as a necessary component in their religious service. And therefore Pesach, the fact that we turn away from Chometz, was part of the turning away from the idolatry of Mitzrayim. As the Malachim expressed before the Rabbeinu Shalom at Kriyas Yamsu, Halolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Halolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah. After the years, 2 centuries that we spent in Mitzrayim, we did not look very different than our Egyptian neighbors. We had also descended into the Avodah Zarah. We had to sever ourselves from the Avodah Zarah. Mishchu yedeichem in Avodah Zarah. Segregate, separate yourselves from the Avodah Zarah. That's the very beginning of the process of the Geula. Chometz, as the Meshech Chochma tells us, is that expression of the necessity of taking concrete steps to separate ourselves from the ways of the non-Jewish world. The world is powerful, it has philosophy, it is attractive, and through all the millennia of Jewish existence, we are exposed to the world around us. And we constantly have to remember our own bearings, what we are and what we're not. And to remember to take that step away from the society in which we live and declare some of its principal values to be non-Jewish and unacceptable to us. And then we can go on the course of serving the Rabbeinu Shalom. We come back to the very foundation of the Jewish people, Ayom Hazeh Niyeh Salaam, on what principles the Jewish people rest. We rest on the ability and the willingness to take a step away from the world around us and declare it un-Jewish and unacceptable. But that's not enough. We have to embrace the Derech Hashem as well. we accept upon ourselves the Rabbeinu Shalom's mitzvahs, that will so sanctify us that the philosophy which lies behind it, the deceiver Yetzias Mitzrayim, the historical events which underlie the practice, will remain with the life force that they have. But if the moment that they are devoid of practice, that they become culture, history, and philosophy, at that very moment, we begin our decline. And it will not be very long in coming in Jewish history until nothing will be left of it. We see that constantly in all of Jewish history. There are many that wished to capture the philosophy, the tradition, but without the commitment to the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah. And there's time after time in Jewish history proven to be a dead end. It does not work. Pesach, we celebrate, we segregate ourselves from Chametz, we embrace the mitzvah Hashem. And then we are ready for our interface with the Rabbeinu Shalom to experience what Yetzias Mitzrayim is. The enormity of the preparations for the Chag are really what give it its great significance. We undertake to serve the Rabbeinu Shalom in such a difficult fashion shows, in fact, the significance of that which we're about to do. I've mentioned many times before, there are all in all the Chagim, but Pesach is the most unique of all the Chagim. There is something, if I may use the word, magical almost about it. The Seder, the experience of the Seder, which so touches those that have experienced it, that it's unforgettable. A person will remember the Seder from 60 years before in his life. Some of the earliest memories of childhood, that which took place at the table of his parents, at the table of the grandparents, and they're very vivid. And even people in the 20th century, because of the very persecutions of the Jewish people, that were separated from practice, half a century later sometimes, they came back and they were able to reconnect to that which had taken place at the other end of a lifetime. So when we undertake the mitzvah maithias of Pesach, is to put ourselves in the position to be able to be showered with the chesed of the Rabbeinu Shalom, with the closeness, the proximity that the Rabbeinu Shalom has to Klal Yisrael, which comes about in the context of the mitzvahs of the Rabbeinu Shalom. If the first of the preparations of the Chag is eliminating chametz from around ourselves, so we need to, it would be nice if we had the luxury of locking up the chametz house, taking a key and opening up a house that was used for 8 days a year just for Yontif, 9 days a year, Erev Yontif, that's it. Imagine you just walked in, everything is perfectly set, china's in the closet, just waits the whole year, then you come in, you blow off the dust a little bit, the sheikhs will come and wipe the dust off, lock up the chametz house and walk out. It would be a wonderful thing. But I don't know if we would experience Pesach if we did that. In life, what's important to us are the things that we work hard for. Our children are important to us because we work hard for them. What's most significant in life is what we're omel for, what we toil for. So let me go over the basics of the kashering. I do want to mention really 2 points that one ought to be careful about in the preparations for Yontif and on Yontif itself. Unfortunately, I was speaking to one of my chaverim, one of the major kashrus agencies today. Many products which are sold for Pesach, which have 100% reliable hashgachah, But the packaging for Pesach is almost exactly the same as the packaging that they use throughout the year. If you take a microscope and you look somewhere, there's a magnifying glass, you somewhere find, after you search and search, you find the words kosher l'Pesach on there. Now the problem is that this leads to a great deal of confusion. And it's very easy to wind up with a product which is not kosher l'Pesach, and imagine that it's kosher l'Pesach. 2 years ago, Chol HaMoed, I spent with one shayla after the next, which had to do with this. I had a call, a woman ordered gefilte fish for Pesach. A Pesach order of gefilte fish. She came, they put it away in the freezer, and they ate it at the first Seder, the second Seder, the first Chol HaMoed, somebody bothered to, and then we're taking one of them out to realize, they looked at it, it was chametz. People have received deliveries. I heard just a story today, and it happened a few years ago because someone called me about it from vendors. 100% reliable vendors. But you get something, a frozen case of goods from them, and you'll open it up. And inside, despite maybe even what's on the outside, and on the inside, you open it up, and the contents is chametz stick in a Pesach sticker box. It's marked chametz stick. No deception, nothing wrong. They just packed it in the wrong case. Side number one is that every time you take a package of food before you use it, before you open it up, better just take the 1 minute to examine it and make sure that this particular package is indeed kosher l'Pesach. You can go into every one of the supermarkets and any day of the week now, and I absolutely guarantee you that you can go around and find endless numbers of non-Pesach products in the Pesach shelves. For a very simple reason. It's a strange dynamic, but it's a very practical dynamic. People go into the store, and they see a box of matzah mel. They pick up a box of matzah mel. Then they keep going around the store, and they realize that they picked this up in the chametz aisle, because now they're in the Pesach aisle. So what do? So they need Pesach to come matzah mel. So they take the Pesach matzah mel and they put it into their shopping cart. Now what are they going to do with the chametz one? They don't bother to go back to where it came from. They take it out, they smack it down on the shelf in the midst of all the kosher Pesach things. The next person that comes along needs a box of matzah mel. It's right on the shelf. A box of cocoa, whatever it is. It's right on the Pesach shelf. Right on the white paper. Smack it into your shopping cart and homeward bound you are. Clown number one, every package of food before you put it into use, examine if it has a hechsher, an appropriate hechsher for Pesach or not. Even if it's a brand that you know, just make sure it's the Pesach one and not the chametz sticker one. No matter where you bought it and how you got it, there are no guarantees unless you do that. That's number one. Number two, they're in the kosher of the Pesach areas of the stores in this part of town and in many other places in the United States. With the growth of the Sephardic community in our country, now the Sephardim have different practices. They use certain kidneys in certain communities, certain ones they don't use. We don't use kidneys at all. Consequently, our vendors today are selling items which contain kidneys in them. We're trying here in Queens that they should be in a special section segregated from the other kosher Pesach items, with marking in the area indicating that this is not for Ashkenazic Jews, and Sephardic Jews should be in touch with their own Rav to find out what their minhagim are in terms, because there are varied practices in different Sephardic communities of what they use and what they don't use. If we would not have this, we are in fact doing a very grave misservice to the Sephardic community, because all of us stop to think, well, right, is kidney. So if you're a Sephardi, I can take out my box of Carolina rice and I could use it on Pesach. Well, maybe yes and maybe no. It happens to be it's not inherently banned because of kidneys. But maybe in fact it was packed in a factory which packs wheat and barley products too on the same machinery. And it has real chametz in it. It's not kidneys, but real chametz. So the first thing one has to know if you're in the Sephardi community is which things which are kidneys happen to be they're also kosher l'Pesach. Just because the kidneys doesn't make them kosher l'Pesach. So we need, in fact, to have our vendors selling these items so that people are aware that do eat kidneys, according to their traditions, which items are actually kosher l'Pesach and which are not. So if you're a person of certainly a person of Ashkenazic background, and even if you're a Sephardic background, depending on what you minhagim are, you do need to be careful to make sure you're not getting something which has kitzias in it. And that also sometimes worth taking and just reading the label. A lot of these products usually state that are permissible for those communities which allow the use of kitzias on Pesach. That means if you're an Ashkenazic Jew, it's certainly not for you. So these are just two important notes where it's very, very easy to do all the work for Pesach and due to a little bit of inattention to wind up in the wrong place. So, two practical notes. Now, we'll go around the kitchen. We do have to kasha the kitchen, Pesach, if we're home. So, how are we going to kasha? So, the first place we have to start is we always have to start with the stovetop. If kashering necessitates the use of hot water, which it does for many things, see, we have to be able to make hot water. So, you can't make hot water until we kosherize the stovetop itself. So basically what we need to do is to wash it very, very well, to cleanse off all the chametz that might have been there, the very trays and compartments underneath, at least basically to clean them out. But they don't have to be absolutely spotless. So we're not putting food down there, but we don't want 5,000 things of chametz down there either, which could, under certain conditions, make problems. So to clean it out, just basically, not... It doesn't have to be absolutely thorough what's underneath, but clean it out. To we're not up to sealed burners yet. We'll get there to sealed burners. Now, the grates usually stand upon some type of pan on which they sit. Now, the best thing would be if we had separate ones for Pesach. If we don't have separate ones, they should be well scrubbed. They're usually not in a position to kasher them. They're usually very, very hard to get them absolutely clean to be able to be kasherable. But so if one can't replace them, one should wash them very well and then cover them over with some heavy-duty aluminum foil and then put them back onto the stovetop. Then take the grates. Once the grates are clean, you don't. If you have a self-cleaning oven and you want to, you could put them in your self-cleaning oven and do them in the self-cleaning oven while you kosher it. But there's no necessity to do so. All that's necessary is, let's first start with a gas oven. If it's a gas stove, is to make pent-up, sort of like a teepee, a little heavy-duty aluminum foil that it goes up. It's not flat on the grate itself. It goes up a little bit. Set the flame relatively high, but just below the aluminum foil, and leave it on for about 15 minutes, and the grate is kosher. And repeat that. Do not cover the entire stovetop with aluminum foil and do all four at once, because you will do serious damage to the stovetop. It is not meant to bear such type of heat. I was speaking to a non-Jewish fellow who repairs appliances, and he says, you know, he says, the problem with appliances for New York, he says, they're made for a long time. This is an exact quote. This is a non-Jew. He says, they're made by a bunch of guy cops like me in Iowa. He says, that's the problem with them. He says, you know, if they had any idea what your community needed, they wouldn't use the things which so disintegrate so readily in heat. They would use things which are much more thermal resistant, and they would survive. But as it is, a lot of the connections and the things they use, the plastic, etc., don't bear up to the heat of just putting a blech on them and keeping it on for Shabbos. It's not designed to be used in such fashion. So consequently, if we're going to cover the whole thing with aluminum foil and put on four flames full blast at once, we're very likely going to singe the enamel on the top. If there are electrical components in the area, we may succeed in melting them and burning them out as well. But that's not the way to go. Do either one or two at a time and just cover the grate. The aluminum foil should not extend beyond the grate. Just over the grate. Put it on for 15 minutes. Close it, it's kosher the Pesach, then do the last two that are left, or wherever, how many you have, and then you finish kosherizing it for Pesach.
And
now,
then,
if you...
And then we'll cover the whole thing
with single gas? Yes. And you can, what? The grate? No, not the grate. The top, the stovetop itself has to be covered. You can cover it at any point you want.
But you can first,
you can do, you can kosher the grates before, once you've taken care of the pans that are directly under it. you can kasher it. I mean, if you, before you put Pesach kelim on it, you probably do want to cover it with some type of form. Now, you can have electric range tops. If you have an electric range top, do not, first of all, do not pour any water onto it. If you pour water onto it, if a little water goes into one of the switches and you press that switch before it's 100% dry, it's going to burn that switch out. And it will probably cost you close to $150 today to get to replace it, besides the fact that you're going to lose part of your burner, your range stop, your whole range stop until the repairman comes. So I don't think too many of us don't have extra hours to waste sitting around idly because the thing went down. So do not pour water on an electric range stop. Now, electric range stops are very, very easy to kasher. Put them, each burner on the highest heat. Most of them start even to glow a little bit red. If they don't, take a little bit of aluminum foil, put it on, once it's on for a while, a few minutes, a few seconds, and it will turn red. Now, red is way beyond what's necessary to kosher a grate on a range top. Now, halacha is turning red is the highest form of libun, of burning something. And we do not have to do that in terms of a grate. A grate, it's only just a chumrah altogether that we kosher it, according to the Ramah. And consequently, even the 10 or 15 minutes under a piece of aluminum foil without turning red is fine. So it's probably that kosher just by turning them on the highest heat. You put a piece of aluminum foil on, after they're on for a few minutes, they will instantly turn red, and that's if you can turn it off, it's kosher. Now, you may be in a situation that you have sealed burners. If you have sealed burners, so usually on top of the glass part or whatever it is, you have a grate. So do the same thing, cover the grate in the same fashion. Now, if you have a glass top oven, stovetop, it's problematic. And the problem is that if you cover it with aluminum foil, it may not exactly appreciate it during Pesach. And one of my friends put a blech on top of his glass top stove, and I came to visit him on Sunday. And he showed me the shirayim of what was left. He had probably between 1,000 and 3,000 pieces. It would have been great to make into a jigsaw puzzle, take all the little pieces of glass and try to put them back together again. But because it was not designed to deal with that type of heat. So I can't tell you what will happen, that you have to consult with your own appliance dealer. Either you're going to get it, how you can cover it without destroying it, and if you can't cover it, then you can't use it on Pesach. But I cannot resolve that problem. Now, around the stove, we tend to have splashbacks on the side and the back, etc. And they do have to be covered, obviously, and the aluminum foil is very good for that because steam goes from the pots and hot steam hits them. The areas tend to be very small, and it's quite likely that the hot steam, after it hits the splashback, is going to bounce back and go back to the pot again. So they do need to be covered for that reason, the splashbacks. If you have some type of handles or switches which turn the oven on and off, it's a very good idea to take all of them off. Take a cup of water mixed with ammonia, soak them overnight in it, then wash them clean. Then, if it's electric especially, dry them. Make sure that you dry them out fully. Let them dry out. And then put them back on once they're 100% dry. Yeah. We'll get to the vents in a moment. We'll get to the vents in a minute. I'm well aware. The vents are the next thing we're going to discuss. All heating devices are vented. You know, microwaves have fans and they have exhaust. Computers have exhaust. Machines do not like heat. And if the heat builds up in them, they get a breakdown. So it's not a very good idea. One has to remember that wherever the vents are for these stoves, to punch holes to let the air vent out, the heat vent out. Because if it doesn't vent out, it's going to make all types of damage. So that one has to do. Now, in general, with venting, you have to be careful. that, for example, let's say you're making chicken in the stove itself, you don't want milchik, your pots, to be adjacent to where the heat is rising up through the vent and coming out. Now, in some ovens, it's all the way in the back, and other ovens, it's under one of the burners. So one has to be sensitive to where what's going on. This is a boss of a cholov issue. It's not particularly a Pesach issue, but it's a boss of a cholov issue, which affects us on Pesach as well. That's as far as stovetops are concerned. Now, let's go from the stovetops. So once the stovetop is kosher, then I can take a kosher Pesach kettle, boil the water. Now, let's go to sinks. Now, first a few general notes about sinks, and then we'll talk about actually what one should do for Pesach with them. Number one, if one has a stopper with which one the sink is closed during the year, that stopper should be replaced. We cannot use the same stopper for Pesach. Not kosherable. If it has a strainer on the bottom of the faucet, which can be unscrewed, one should replace it. There are some parts in there which one ought not to kosher. It costs all of about $1 or $1 and change to replace it. It's good to replace it. Now, before one begins to kosher a sink, the first thing is to make sure that we don't kosher things which were used in the last 24 hours with anything hot. So we have to make sure that we don't use anything hot in the sink for the 24 hours before we kosher. And there are two basic ways of achieving that. And if you one, you can put up a big sign and tell everyone not to do it. And then you'll call me about 23 hours later that somebody just put on the hot water and can I kosher the sink. That's one method that you could use. A second method that you can use is to close the hot water in the kitchen sink, which can be achieved in one of two ways. Either if you have a check valve underneath the sink, close the check valve if you can get it all the way off. If that's too difficult, or it doesn't exist, or it no longer works, so you can do what my son does. He takes the handle of the hot water faucet off. And that's it. He takes it off and he puts it away. So there's no way to turn on the hot water if one wants to for 24 hours. And then when we kosher, he puts it back. Yes? Listen, how to gauge yatzoledes is a very difficult thing. When we have Paiskin that will tell us anywhere from 104 degrees up could be yatzoledes. At 104 degrees, 113 degrees, 120 degrees, 145 degrees, 160 degrees. So one gets the idea it's not so easy to determine what is the lowest point that's below yatzoledes, the point that's below any possibility of yatzoledes. So if it actually happens, then you'll have a shiloh. But the best, as in most things in life, is to avoid the problem in the first place. Now, yes. Don't, if you have anything to do, if your hot water is on, you don't know what's going to happen. Because what may happen is you may put on the faucet and the water will come out hot and you'll have a problem. You close the hot water and gone for 24 hours. That is the simplest way of dealing with this problem. Now, the drains, if you ever had the plumber come to your house, because the kitchen drain was stuffed up, and he opened up the trap, so it's rather surprising. You can write a history of what you serve for the last 3 months based on what comes out, you know, because a lot collects down there, noodles and all types of things, and consequently, to make sure that if the thing backs up on Pesach, that there's no chametz to be concerned about, it's worth pouring down something caustic in the day that you're going to kosher, whether a little bit of a bleach, a little bit of ammonia, obviously don't mix the two. They don't make a very pleasant chemical reaction. But one of them, and let it sit down there a little bit so that it renders inedible anything which is left still down in the drain. Now, how does one kosher the sink? Well, for our purposes, there are sinks which come in two types. There are stainless sinks and non-stainless sinks. For the stainless sinks, all one has to do is boil hot water on the stovetop, which is now kosher, and pour slowly on every single spot in the sink hot water, including on the spout where the water comes out, and splash a little bit on the bottom, because we do, for example, drain spaghetti, from the that we cook during the year. We dump the water out, and it inevitably gets all over the sink as we're dumping, as we're draining spaghetti. That water is absolute chametz. So, and dump it on, so on the spout, and all over the sink, and in the drain area as well. And if it's a stainless sink, we don't have to, we can leave it uncovered for the whole Pesach. There's no need to cover it. If it's a non-stainless sink, what I advise is to still do the same process of dumping hot water all over it, but it does have to be covered afterwards, because anything other than stainless is questionable if it could be kasher, then we don't undertake the kasher for Pesach. Consequently, it should be covered, whether with one of the commercial liners that you get, or whether with aluminum foil, but it should be covered. And if you use aluminum foil, use a heavier gauge, because there's a lot of activity around the sink. And the last thing you want to do is for the aluminum foil to get torn, and then start having to patch it and to fix it during Yom Tov is not very comfortable. Yes?
You pour in hot water and stainless steel. You can't just let the water run through. Like every spot...
No, Ramosha pasta, you cannot just let it run through. You just...
You have to use a lot of pasta.
Yeah, you may use any number of kettles worth, you know. When we kosher in my house, we run 3 kettles boiling at one time. For that reason, so we should be able to keep moving and not to waste a lot of time. Now, one more thing, then we'll come back. Now, that which I said, that if you use stainless, you have a stainless sink, that you can just pour hot water on and it's kosher, has one caveat. And that is, if your personal style is that you take hot pots right off the stovetop and you sometimes put them down directly in the stainless sink, then this method does not work. And the reason for it is that a hot pot is considered the equivalent of being on the fire itself. And if the chametz is absorbed, that may have been in this thing, by being on the fire, the only way I can kosherize that is by, in effect, creating a situation where it's on the fire again. Now, pouring hot water is one step removed from the fire. So the halacha devised a very difficult system, which is called an evan melubin. They take a heated stone, and pour hot water and on the sink, and then run behind it with the heated stone, which will cause it to steam up and cook it on the surface. It's not a very practical thing in our kitchens to do, and it is relatively on the dangerous side. So I'm not recommending. If your style really is to put down hot pots, then just get some type of sink liner and cover your sink after you kosher it and proceed. Now, I think that's yeah. Question?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is there anything like to get water on the side? I'm very difficult to get the high boiling water on the side of the sink.
If you use a tea kettle with a spout, so then you can direct it slowly.
Yeah.
So then just listen, do your best to cover it then, that's all. If you're not comfortable, cover it. Yeah,
double. Can't you fill the sink with water and just throw it in there?
If you're going to get it all to boil, you want it to boil not just more than just in that one little tiny space with a hot rocket. That's not so easy to do. Yeah, there are certain immersion coils which you can buy for somewhere about $70, which are strong enough to cause the whole thing, every sink to boil. You know, if you want to use them, so then you don't need to be boiling hot water. You can just plug it in and it'll boil all the water in the sink, and that's fine. Yeah. No. Just whatever. The day you're koshering, dump it down, leave it down there, whatever, until you put on the sink again, until you're finished. At the beginning of the process, I dump it down, and then later it will wash out with all the water going down.
Okay.
Then I'll leave it in there for a while. Like, you know, I leave it in there for a while before I, you know, wash it out.
How long?
15 minutes, half an hour, whatever.
But that's before you put
in the boiling water. Yes, before the boiling water. Yeah. No, you're not going to get it all out. You're just going to have to cover that. It is, you know, with an older sink, it's just not possible to get all that out. So just pour water and then cover around it. I mean,
okay,
I cover all of
it.
Or whatever it is, whatever you're going to do. So there's no direct contact.
That's
with
not
it.
The answer, though.
Yeah, correct. But I do, I didn't talk about countertops. I'll deal with that when I get to countertops. That's, yeah.
Regarding the backsplash, is this behind
I cover the whole backsplash, the back, the side, and I should even tell you, I cover up the hood that's over the oven too. Well, we'll come to that. Yes, I cover the splashbacks around, all around the sink.
What if you oven control the
back? So you're going to have to leave them obviously uncovered. It's, you know, as little as you can, but you're going to have to.
So that backsplash doesn't always have any hole or anything to the toe face to hold itself before
it's a little... A little bit of duct tape solved the problem. Duct tape. So, you know, a little bit of duct tape does the job. What? Oh, that's also true. There's metal duct tape for flues, okay? Very good idea. That's used for flues. The plumbers use, you know, for the flue and the coming off the boiler. Sure they have it over here. These places have all the supplies. Now, countertops. Let's talk about countertops. Now, in the home, one doesn't usually have stainless steel countertops, but if you do have them, so it'll be included in the following remarks. Countertops, as far from the standpoint of this share, deal either with ones that are real granite. Now, in this country, it's rare to have in Israel. You might have a real marble one of Shayish. But I'm talking real. None of these compound, not Corian, none of these compound materials. But the real stuff. If it is, then halachically one could dump hot water in every spot and one doesn't have to cover it. But again, with the proviso that you don't normally put hot pots directly on it. Otherwise, you're going to have to cover it anyhow. Now, even if it has a sealer on it, on the countertop itself, one can still kosherize it. At one time I had some doubt about it, as I've mentioned before, but I asked Rav Scheinberg Shlita, and he told me to kosher it anyhow, so that's operative psak. They all have sealers because, if not, they would be porous, and they would get stained, because colored liquids would seep into them, and they would really damage them. There would be no means of extracting them. So that's as far as now. Around the splashbacks, one should cover all the way around, because there's a lot of chametz there, and one works with all different things, including hot things. One works on the counter too. You take something out of the oven, it's hot, it can splash. Now, especially we Ashkenazim are very machmer, because our shita is that even if the chametz was used there more than 24 hours previously, it can still make the food prohibited. So we Ashkenazim particularly have to be very machmer in that halacha. And the areas all around the sink, which are outside the sink, I also cover. Don't leave any of them uncovered.
You cover double?
Use something heavy. If it's not so heavy, make it double. If it's very heavy, it's quite heavy, you don't need to make it double. Now, microwaves, I don't think we should even talk about kashering them anymore. I mean, we want to go down to the local stores and you can buy a microwave for $40 or $50 today. So the thought of even bothering, usually the non-kasherable anyhow, because plastic really should, Ramosha Paschal, plastic should not be kasher for Pesach, and it certainly at least is the preferable standard that we should assume. So in today's world, you know, why bother? Yeah. I do. It's a chumrah. You don't have to. But the reason I pour hot water, even if I have enamel countertops, I pour hot water on them for one simple reason. There are four mica. The reason is that if the covering should tear on Pesach and some of the Pesach utensils hit the countertop, then I don't want there to be any problem. If I've dumped hot water on it before, I would not have to be machmer and have any concern on Pesach itself. That's the reason that I... No, I don't. Because I'm not so concerned. I'm more concerned that the bottom is going to tear than something's going to happen in the back. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Sam. So that's very good.
doesn't seem to be the great problem.
I know, Kana. If you use that, you probably don't have much problem. So, you know, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah,
the edge certainly should be covered. The front edge, absolutely. I mean, that certainly probably has more chametz than anything else on it, almost. Yeah.
You can cover with other things inside aluminum foil, right? But things
like plastic. Yeah, you could do. Yeah, but it's you want to make sure that you're not going to be in a position where a hot liquid could interact with the surface on the bottom. Okay, that's your problem. If you, in other words, if you're going to use something that's thin and you get a hole in it, then you can have Shiloh from Pesach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any utensils which are not usable for Pesach, just close them up. Put a tape or something on them or a string and tie them closed so it's clear that they're not intended for Pesach, and that's fine. No, you don't have to. You don't have to. If you're not using the microwave, you don't have to do anything with it.
Well,
I would. You could hypothetically kosherize them if you really want to bother. But first, you have to really scrub them absolutely clean, including the fan area. In general, as I say, in my thinking, I am not a big fan of koshering, except things in the kitchen which absolutely have to be kosher. Perhaps bechers, you know, Kiddush cups. Because Kiddush cups are, to the largest extent, it's only a chumrah that we consider them chumrah stick. We don't cook anything hot in them. We don't put anything hot in them. The basic reason that we kosherize them for Pesach is we wash them with the chumrah stick dishes. And therefore, they may become chumrah stick in that fashion. But the problems with attempting to kosher most things are far greater problems than we generally tend to realize. You know, pots, you know, and classically, yeah, the literature all talks about koshering pots, but they also didn't deal with the fact that all the consumer-oriented pots have curled lips at the top, and one cannot, which it's totally impossible to clean out thoroughly. So for the whole year, we don't use it for 24 hours, and after that, we're saying whatever, in case there is something there, it's only a tiny bit, but all of these things don't help us for Pesach. You know, commercial, as I said, koshering is designed, the way koshering works, according to the Shulchan Aruch, for utensils, is designed very, very much for the commercial setting. The commercial things are of much heavier gauge, and they can take a lot more abuse in the koshering than a home things can. They don't have these fancy curled lips at the top. They're totally open on the bottom. They're totally accessible. And one can use in commercial settings the type of methods which one ought not use in one's house. And even in commercial settings, they sometimes get out of hand. Some guys I know are koshering a hotel, and I can tell you one thing for sure. They certainly got rid of all the chametz. I mean, they succeeded by a mistake that they made, and actually they burned the kitchen down. So the chametz all went up. They were Mekayim beer chametz, but there wasn't a kitchen left, which happened. I was in a hotel, which I just stopped in to visit this past summer, up in the Catskills, where they're rebuilding the main building that apparently, that when they were koshering it for Pesach one year, there was some mistake made in how they were handling something, and the entire building went up in the middle of the night. So even in commercial settings, it sometimes gets out of hand. But in commercial settings, are designed. They have everything is heavy-duty steel, the stovetops. There's nothing dainty and nice-looking that we would put in our house kitchen. And therefore, they're subject to the use of methods which are not suitable for the house. A blowtorch is not something that one should be using in one's house. There are much too many flammable materials in the area of a kitchen, which you don't have in a commercial kitchen. And also, you do have to know how to use it. It's not a very pleasant thing to make a mistake with. If you take a blowtorch and you put it on a surface, let's say for 30 seconds, that's all, not a long time. After that, take your finger and touch that surface, you'll feel like you have a match lit to your finger for the next 4 hours. Okay. After maybe 4 hours and keeping ice on it for that time, maybe it'll start to fade a little bit, and then you just have a nasty burn left for who knows how long. It's not something that you want to tangle with. If you're not used to dealing with it, you shouldn't be dealing with torches, and they're not designed for home use.
Can you talk about kashrut bechors, whether
or not outside to be a hum could be a hum for a trash? No, you should basically, you're kashrut before yontif. It's more than 24 hours before yontif. You want to kashrut a bechor, you take a pesach, take a pot, and you clean the becher, you throw it in while it's at a rolling boil, then you take them out, and you put them, rinse them in cold water, and they're kosher. And there is even a milah, according to Minig, at the end, if you can, to re-kosherize the pot in which you kosher them, but it's not a necessity in Mitzarad Dim. This is before Pesach.
What?
Yeah, so that's very simple if you have that. Yeah, yeah. You cannot, some things you could kasher with it, and you think you can probably kasher with it. There's some things you cannot kasher kalim with it. Because as I mentioned before, to kosherize a kalim utensils, you have to put them in directly into the boiling water itself. For countertops, it would be fine, I believe.
How long does it have to be in the boiling water?
There's no share. The biggest machmer share I ever saw was 15 seconds, but I don't think it has a real basis as it did. I think any amount is fine. They should cover it. They should cover it. If they eat on it, they should cover it for Pesach. Now, let's talk about tables. Now, tables, really, there's really not much that has to be done with a table. Obviously, we're not going to eat on the tabletop that we eat on during the year. So if you have a dinette table and you sometimes eat on the dinette table during the year, that's fine for the whole year, but it's not fine for Pesach. So on Pesach, you should wash it well. I mean, I, for the same reason that I dump hot water on the countertop, I dump hot water on the kitchen table too. Again, it's a chumrah. Is not a necessity, or it's, you know, of dumping it on the formica, but again, in case anything does get uncovered, it shouldn't be a shiloh, and after that, I cover it. And the dining room table, you don't doesn't dump water on once you just cover. There's probably more than one cover for the same reason, to make sure that nothing, in fact, comes in contact with the table itself. What? Usually two layers is fine for that reason. In case you get a hole in one layer, that you're not going to still hit the chum and stick a table. And that's it. That's all there is to kashering a table. Now, if it's one of these tables which expands, then you need to pull it apart and then clean out in the seam, which tends to collect chametz to see that there's no chametz left in the seam. But use the same table pad, yeah.
I
cover over the table pads with cardboard. I usually, if there's a table piece, a chomet sticker one, so I put cardboard, and then I put the tablecloth on top of it. What? Sometimes, who knows what gets on it. I don't want to take any chances for Pesach. I'm not telling you you're absolutely v'choyer, but it's a very good method, so just to make sure you don't wind up with a problem. Well, then you're fine. That's enough. That's all you need. Yes. Now, the refrigerator needs to be washed out well. That's basically all one has to do with it. There's no necessity of covering the shelves, and it's not really the best idea to do so, because the cold air has to circulate throughout the refrigerator. That's why they make them with those types of shelving, the wire shelving, to allow the cold air to go through. And you may notice some, whatever, depending how it's made. You know, you have to be careful not to stop the air from going through. And if you put too many things inside, they still designed it to allow space for the air to go through. And if you stuff everything up, if you overstuff your refrigerator, you'll notice the food feels warmish. And that's because the cold air can't get through. So you have to be careful with that for Pesach as well. Now, The only problem you have to do, you have to be careful about, is if you put hot pots directly into the fridge during the year, then either you want to cover the shelves or make sure that you don't put hot pots in on Pesach. One of those two. But you're probably better off then if you're going to put hot pots into at least to cover them with something. So because a hot pot could, if there's any liquid under the hot pot, create a very serious shayla on Pesach. It depends. I mean, a hot, usually not. If it wasn't cooked in that Tupperware, then it's not. If it was cooked in that Tupperware, it's also a problem. Now, with refrigerators, just 1 second, Russell, one has to be careful to clean all around the gasket, at the edges of the gasket, and on the top. The top, sometimes things tend to gather on the top for some strange reason. I don't know why, but if you climb up there and you look on the top of the gasket, a lot of times there are a lot of crumbs up there that should be cleaned off. Yeah, Russell.
I thought it was the word with the plate.
The door of?
Refrigerator, you know. Like the shelves.
You just shut the door shelves?
Yeah.
Just wash them out well, that's all.
Wash them out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Now, dishwashers, to the largest extent, I'm not in favor of kashering. If they're not made of stainless steel, there's nothing to talk about at all. If they are made of stainless steel, you still would have to replace the racks and clean them very, very thoroughly and then run them through 3 cycles, one with soap, and you could kosherize them. Now, if the rabbis would ever come up with a heter that after the Seder you could put the dishes into the dishwasher, then I really would have a yetzer to find a heter. But since the rabbis haven't allowed us to use the dishwasher after the Seder, most of my Yetzirah disappeared already, you know. By the time Chol HaMoed comes, what am I going to do with the dishwasher? You know, the problem is behind us already. Now, yeah.
Moving back to the refrigerator, if you have a freezer with an ice maker where it's sort of like a big, let's call it a drawer of ice, can you use that taste up?
I would throw out the ice that's there. Make sure that obviously you're going to clean the chametz out, and if there's no chametz in the area of the ice maker, because it has to be packed up anyhow, the chametz, and covered up that's left over. And then you can use the ice maker on Yom Tov, on Pesach. Now, if you have an instant hot on your sink, you can dump hot water on the outside of it from a kettle, as I mentioned before, let it boil up a little bit, let some water out of it, and it's kosher for Pesach. But again, before you do it, you kosherize it. You should not use it for 24 hours for chametz before. If you have the spritzer, the sprayer on the side of the thing, by and large, they're not kosherable. If you want, you could replace them. They're usually made of rubber, which is not kosherable. If you can unscrew them and put on a new one, if you really want it for Pesach, that's fine. If not, just cover it up and forget about it until after Yom Tov. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so dump hot water on it before Yom Tov and leave it alone. That's all. I wouldn't want dump hot water on it before Yom Tov, and that's all. Yeah.
You have to move the refrigerator or anything heavy.
No, there is no. Let me be very clear. There is no halachic obligation to pull out your refrigerator or your stove or those heavy or your washing machine and find out what's under there. Unless you're the type that normally, you know, you can't let any week go by without pulling them out from the wall, you're such a compulsive cleaner, then you actually would have an obligation to clean them out before Pesach, because then you're going to go to those places. Most of us live in very joyful bliss, leaving the refrigerator and the stove where they are, and being totally oblivious to what's underneath them, and life somehow manages to go on. So that's what I suggest for Pesach. Yeah.
Getting back to the refrigerator,
a paper towel, I wouldn't be happy about.
Yeah,
if you put it under some, you know, because the problem is that if a hot liquid will go right through it. I said a paper towel I wouldn't be happy with because it doesn't let liquid go through. And it could become chametz sick. If anything spills out, the shelf will actually be chametz sick. Now, we do not, for example, kasha glass. Glass is a very strange status in the halacha. And there are three different views of what glass is. Some state that glass is a unique material, which halachically has no issue of absorbing anything. It never becomes treif, it doesn't become fleishig, it doesn't become milachig, it just stays pristine. Some view glass as something which absorbs and is kosherable. And a third view views glass as the equivalent of earthenware, which is impossible to kosherize. During the year, principally the halacha is that we view it as something which does not become treif. There are some that are machmer, but principally the ikar halacha is that it does not become treif. But when it comes to Pesach, the Rambam was machmer to treat glass like earthenware. So we do not kasher glass for Pesach. That's the problem, that if we spilled something on it during the year, and I spilled again from a hot pot on it on Pesach, I would have a problem. No. So, one second. What's left is, we didn't talk about ovens yet. The most daunting of the challenges. Just one further note, when it comes to the sinks again, there's a dump water on the faucet, on the spigots, on the spout itself, the dump water onto the spout itself, and even splash on the bottom too.
You pour the spout in the, even if you put water,
you don't have to tinfoil it, no.
If you put water,
well, that's fine. Now, let's...
It's enamel.
They're usually not enamel. Most of them are made. Most of them, not all. Yeah. Now, yeah. If you have a filter on top of the sink, one of those water, you should change it for Pesach. Do not use. I would think so. That's my impression. I would believe that. I want to see it, but I believe if it's a stainless steel filter, you could just dump hot water on it. Yeah, the easy filters, yes. The easy filters you should really not, you know, it would be wise if you changed them for Pesach, but those type of filters. Okay, now we're left with, last thing is ovens. Ovens, for our purposes, also come in two types. Come in self-cleaning ovens, which have become quite ubiquitous in the last 20 years, and non-self-cleaning ovens. I mean, I do not know anyone in our community who replaces an oven today that does not install a self-cleaning oven. It just doesn't happen. That's at the top of the list of what people want. So if you have a self-cleaning oven, take the oven racks, put them in there, put it on for 3 hours. But one piece of advice, you do still have to clean it significantly before you put on the self-cleaning cycle. Because if you don't do so, it's going to make a fire. Because the grease will get on fire. And as I mentioned before, I have a friend who was all ready for Pesach. Everything was perfectly in order. All he had to do was kosher the oven. He put on the oven, and a few minutes later, we had flames shooting out through the vents on the top of the stovetop. Fortunately, he is, what can I tell you, a fanatic about gadgets. And he had a very good gadget to have. He had a fire extinguisher in his kitchen, and he managed to put it out. So all he suffered was a little bit of soot around the kitchen, but nothing more than that happened to him. So one doesn't need that happening. So one needs to be basically clean. If you don't have a self, no, you don't. You need to clean around the gasket on the outside of the oven. There's no chiyuv to cover over the door, and that's fine. Now, if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, then it's a big challenge. One has to clean it well, put on some caustic type of cleanser, and I highly recommend that you spend a few dollars to get a pair of goggles. I mean, to cover one's eyes so that one is not exposed. These things are very caustic, they are very, very dangerous, And some don't. One should not put one's head into the oven because it can actually drip down and fall on a person and actually cause quite a severe burn. And after one uses them appropriately, clean the oven out very, very well. And after it's clean, to put it on to 1 hour and a half at the highest heat. And the preferable in the process to take an aluminum fan, foil pan of hot water and put it on the bottom and allow that, put hot water into that pan so that it should steam up and steam the inside of the oven too while it is being kosher for Pesach. Now, after all is said and done, if it is a non-self-cleaning oven, it's not going to get hot enough to alleviate the problem to that we should be sure that it's not chametz sick. And therefore, it does need to be covered somehow. The best means that I found to cover it is with heavy-duty aluminum foil. And one has to be careful to not cover over the thermostat. And obviously, not the coils, which provide the heat. And I take long, before I had a self-cleaning oven, I took a very long U-shaped sheet and put it on the side, the back, and around to the other side of the oven. And then on top of that, I made a piece supported by the first three walls to cover the ceiling, and another piece on the bottom to cover the floor, and then I wrapped the door as well. Now, not an easy task. And the question of how to get the racks in is one has to leave enough aluminum foil that one could press the aluminum foil very tightly against the tracks, which support the racks, and then put them in very, very gently. They will go in as you flatten the silver foil all the way. But one piece of advice, that if you do that, do not take the racks out until Yom Tov. And what we used to do when we had that type of stove was we took the food in and out, but the racks did not move on Pesach at all. And if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, you should take the racks and give them to someone that has a self-cleaning oven and put them in there for 3 hours. Has no halachic significance. You have to do it as a regular oven. Continuous cleaning ovens have no halachic relevancy. Now, of the things that need to be changed, which we sometimes overlook, is the things that we use for young children. The baby bottle should be changed for young children. Typically, the formulas are acceptable for Pesach, but the kidney is. So the baby bottle should be washed, not in the kitchen. The high chair should be washed off and the surface is covered. And whatever bibs one normally uses, probably one should put them away and take out different ones for use on Pesach. Now obviously all the birkonim, the birchas hamazon benches that we have, which we use throughout the year, should be put away and locked away for Pesach. The possibility of cleaning every last crumb of chametz out of them is less than zero. So we just put them away and use the Haggadah. The Haggadah is Birchas HaMazon too. And it never saw a piece of challah, the Haggadah.
I would
clean the, if you can self-clean the bottom one, I would clean it too.
Then
clean it out and it's fine. That's enough, yes. Now if you have a broiler compartment on the bottom that you want to use, on the bottom of your range top, you may have a broiler compartment under the oven. So for a broiler compartment, all one has to do is to be washed out well, cleansed. The fire should be put on for about an hour's time. And whatever trays are in there, while you're koshering your oven, you should put them in a self-cleaning oven for 3 hours. Yes, correct. No problem at all. Yes. No, you just need to clean it. Yes, yes, yes. Does it?
There's a storage drawer under the oven.
So take it out and at least dump it, you know, shake it out before you
enter. And just don't use it on yourself.
Correct.
You
don't have to lock it, just don't use it. Unless you, if you can clean it out, fine. You can use it on Pesach too, if you clean it out. There's no reason not to use
it. And also, is there any halakhic significance to cleaning it out before self-cleaning it, or is it just a safety issue?
It's purely a safety issue. You should, you ought to cover them with something. They're hard, unless it's a material that's wood, which a lot of the shelving is made from. Very hard to know that they're thoroughly cleaned. And if it's the type of material which could be thoroughly washed, then it would be fine not to cover them. But most of the closets that we have ought to be covered.
Shelves,
yeah. Yeah. Yes. No, I'm not always sure if the grates are going to withstand the heat in the self-cleaner. They usually do, but it's overkill. So if you want to do it, it's fine. I'm not 100% sure if all of them are designed to withstand the amount of heat that you're going
to
throw at it.
You
could do that. Again, I'm not sure it's going to withstand that heat. That's my concern. This color it will. That it's going to turn it sort of grayish, chalkyish a little bit. Yeah. If you're not going to walk in the house and no one else is going to walk in the house, then you don't have to worry about it other than doing B'dikas Chametz in one room. The rest you can solve. But you have no necessity of cleaning and kashering if you're not going to be there, nor will anyone else be there. No, it's nothing to do with the stove top. It is only to kasher the grates. If you have separate grates for Pesach, you don't need it. You don't. Don't bother. Just cover it up and that's all. Just finish with it. Usually not. I don't think so. I mean, especially most of the things you have in a pantry are packaged as it is. You know, you take the shelves out, you clean them off. You know, more than that, I wouldn't worry too much about it. You know, if you know it's sticky there, so do something about it.
They're not
the bottom's not. No. If it depends what the residue. If the residue looks ashy, then you don't have to worry. But if it seems to be a heavy residue, then you want to put ammonia on it, scrub it clean again, and then put it on again. Yeah, Judy.
You don't have to get to the kosher right to your burner?
What?
You have the grate, and then...
The jet itself, you told me. Okay. Oh, the jet is no necessity, the kosher. No.
So
only for the grate. The jets do not need, because we don't put anything directly on the jet. But the drip ins we said already have to be covered. That's not relevant to caution.
When you have a sealed burner, so my father has a new grate, okay, so that's fine. And he has a sealed burner. So the sealed burner, you don't have to, you just scrub it then.
Well, you do, yeah, it's no different than any other.
You
should put it on because you do want to kosherize it. What's it made of?
Oh, because it's a grate, so is that an animal?
But I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what the material is. I mean, it's the same as the surrounding areas of any other stone. Beyond the grates, you have to cover it with something.
It's still harder. If that's where the grate comes out of.
What?
There's a cabinet
on the top of it. Yeah.
Where the
flames
come in.
Yeah.
You don't have to
hit that area? You have... The shield is made of what? Glare? What's it made of material? It's an enamel. What is it?
I think it's
metal.
Metal.
What? Now you have a grate that goes on top of that. The grate has to be kosherized. Now, The area around the grate is no different than any other stove that you would have. That either you cover it with something, where the flames come out, it's not an issue. Well, I'm talking the areas around it. Where the actual jet itself does not need to be covered.
So the area around it.
Either, your best is to cover it. Replace it. A steel burner, you can't replace it. So. Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any. Just wash the outside of it, and that's all. If you use it for hot, you have to dump hot water on the spigot. Same thing, just wash it well. No, absolutely not. So don't pour boiling water on the stove. You don't do, it's not, it's not just covered over. It's not the best course of action for a lot of reasons. Yeah. The vent of the stove itself you have to leave uncovered, otherwise it's not going to function properly. But I do cover over the hood. I cover it. I don't bother to, the hood I just cover over. I mean, it does, a lot of chametz goes up there, and I wouldn't want any of it to come down again on Pesach, so I cover it over with aluminum foil, and that's it. I don't use it during the Yom Tov.
The actual opening?
The hood, the hood.
Where it actually comes out.
Yeah, and the hood is on the top. I cover the whole thing over. So it just disappears. If he came there, Pesach, he wouldn't know that I have it. Yes. The same as anybody else's stove,
and
yes.
You just make holes for the steel
burners? Yeah.
Even though nothing is going
to... Well, we don't use... Well, we can't say they're never going to touch. You know, we don't know what... Never is a big word.
But you have to, because
it's
like one piece on top of the whole stove.
Yeah.
One big...
If it can touch, there would be no necessity, just around the edges where it might touch, that's all. If there's no edge that it could touch, then there's no problem. No, if it's not possible to touch that edge, then you wouldn't have to cover it. Food, I don't care, so you won't eat the food that falls through. Yeah, not a problem. No. Just wash it out and that's all.
If the foil does tear, let's say on the stovetop, is there any problem with sort of taking or putting on? Should you put the new right on top of the foil?
You want to have it convenient. Just do it.
So, like, if your problem would be a tape opening up the top?
No. Just do whatever's easiest.
And what if it's on your foot?
So, have extra pieces ready and just cover it over and that's all. Okay, I thank everyone and the Rabbeinu Shlomo to give us koyach to do the job the right way. Hakosha b'samech. If it's coming in there, you have to go and be close to the